On to the next episode. It's the other half.
It's the other half. All right, you want me to start or you start?
You go ahead.
Okay. All right. Next up, number 5 for me. This is our boy. And this was shocking. This got bumped down last minute by a couple last minute things that I watched. But number 5 for me is our boy. You know we love him. Bob Zemeckis is here. Number 5 for me. Similar to Juror number 2, we did talk about this one at length in another episode if you want to hear more expanded upon. But I will say I have not stopped thinking about this movie since I watched it, and then since I watched it again. It only grows in admiration for me, and in both ways that we talked about on the episode. I do, the more I live with it, the more I think it's a wonderfully angry love letter, which is something that's really hard to pull off. So yeah, I think Bob's at his maybe most acidic and maybe at his most heartfelt all at the same time, and not many people can do that. And as we said many times on that episode, just watch it for yourself. Maybe decide how you feel before you let the internet tell you how to feel about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I might have a piece on it in a bit. My next one, Juror number 2.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, we like this movie enough, right? Like, it's good. It's a good movie.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think what you were saying about, like, people are like, it's a return to this or that. It's sure, I guess, but it really is, you know, there's so much more to this movie than simply attacking it from that angle. And to me, it's just the epitome of what late style should be. It's deceptive. It's not showy. It's honestly so admirable because he's really finding the simplicity in what he's doing, and he's paring it down to kind of just the building blocks. And that sort of reduction when you're a master chef can be quite tasty. And this is what I mean. Why cinema belongs to the masters sometimes. Cause it's like, let's see Osgood Perkins do that shit.
He couldn't pull off like making 1 minute of this movie successfully.
Yeah. Any of these assholes, like you just, even when you're good, like no one's this good. And
no one has this much wisdom as well. The wisdom that he is so kindly giving to us with this movie.
Yeah, man. One of the most fantastic final images and final scene that we have talked. We're not going to spoil, but if you want to hear at length us talk about it, there's the episode where we discuss that. But yeah.
You want to be like, obviously John Ford is my favorite, but you know what? I'm going to give it a go. See if I can close one as strong as our boy does. I'm going to give it a go.
Well done, Mr. Eastwood, and we're very happy to find out that you are already shopping your next movie around. So
keep going, buddy. Keep going. This doesn't have to be your swan song.
We need you.
We need you. Please hang on.
Don't go. I can't debate Will on Nathan Silver for the rest of this, so please don't go anywhere. Just try to stay around.
Well, on that note, you'll be happy with my next one. I'm sure you don't disagree here. The only thing that was difficult here was to pick which movie by this filmmaker would be in my top 10 for this year, because this fucking maniac had 3 movies.
I think we might have the same number 4.
All right. Well, we'll see. What if we picked a different one? So this guy, yeah, put out a short film called Chime, and he put out 2 feature films, one of which is a remake of one of his own movies called A Serpent's Path. And then my number 4, the other movie he put out this year, is a movie called Cloud by Kiyoshi Kurosawa. I loved all 3 films. I have lots to say about all 3, but for me, Cloud is a... Not that he, in my opinion, he's never dipped as a filmmaker. Like, there's no period of his career where I'm like, shit, maybe he'll come back. But if I were forced to choose a strongest period, this is hearkening back to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
This film, fucking astonishing.
No, it cracks. It fucking cracks. It's perfect. I mean, it's... I put it as my number four, Chime and this. I just put them together. Not that I'm trying to exclude Serpent's Path. I loved Serpent's Path. And, you know, these were just really, really, both of Chime and Cloud felt of a piece, very strong. And not that Serpent's Path doesn't, because I do even have pushback on the remake part, because
it's not
part remakes of an interpretation that original Serpent's Path and the its side-by-side film Eyes of the Spider were virtually remakes, you know, reimaginings of one another. So I look at it as, yeah, that third piece come.
Yeah, late. It's a triptych now more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a great, but to single that one out, I'd have to go through why those are special, because I think that enhances it. But yeah, Chime and Cloud. Well, let's talk about Cloud, because yeah, I mean, Cloud was so fucking thrilling. It was funny as hell. I've never seen so much disdain for a character from a director, and just watching them work themselves into this little hell was fucking great.
Yeah, it's a comedy to me, without even doing plot, because I don't think that matters here. Well, it does, but I mean, matters for our conversation. I think Kiyoshi is just like, look, we all need to take a step back and realize how fucking stupid we are that we put ourselves in this spot as human beings living in the developed world, because it's absolutely fucking absurd what we all do to ourselves every single day. And accept as just the way it is, and that the way it has to be. The reason this one is a step up for me from Chime, technically, even though Chime, I have no notes. The only reason this one takes it for me is the comedy that you mentioned, because as always with Kiyoshi, the tension here, the dread, don't worry, it's still there and it'll still make your fucking skin crawl. But the comedy might be the best he's ever pulled off.
It really is. I mean, when he's, yeah. So it's a character who makes his money by reselling things on the internet. These people exist. You're probably one of them listening to this shit. You're one of them for sure. But like, at least you peddle wares that you somewhat care about.
Absolutely.
Clearly couldn't be more give a shit about it. It seems like he doesn't really give a shit about anything. And the ultimate twist with his girlfriend is so funny. And I've seen some people say it's a little overwrought, but I think they're missing the like kind of the point, like the joke there, I guess, which could be a little broad on the surface, sure. But if you couple it with this kind of almost parody of how he climaxes his movies in warehouses usually, like, yeah. I really, for the Kiyoshi Kurosawa fan, you know, this is pure heroin. This is exactly, there's no buts, but it's shot in English or some bullshit. No, this is, I mean, he's always been great, but this is kind of redefines that. And I feel the same way about Chime, because I think they both exhibit what he does so well. And sure, there is that dread in Cloud that is so signature of Mr. Kurosawa, but the dread is just so ratcheted up to a kind of a sequel-esque to his masterpiece Cure. I mean, it felt truly chilling and upsetting, and I also thought it was kind of funny too, because I don't think the guy cannot not be funny.
Because that's why he is so obsessed with Toby Hooper, because Toby Hooper is the same, yeah. You know, when he's firing all that, he, you know, Tobe didn't fire quite as strong all the time as Kurosawa did, but when he was, that dread was that insane level, and that comedy was always still there, because he's smart enough to know there's no such thing as horror without comedy, you know.
Yeah, you kind of need both of them, and one attacks resellers, one attacks the modern celebrity chef, I guess, or someone
wanted to do that. Yeah. I'm just fucking teachers.
It's awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, what more can we say? Kiyoshi, we love you. Like,
yeah, I guess maybe you could say it's a stretch a little, but maybe this is, these two together are his attack on just the gig economy, right?
Yeah.
This guy's not a teacher because he loves it, even though he does love cooking technically. That's not why he has those classes.
Right.
you know, and same with this piece of shit reselling stuff.
Like, well, he's such a piece of shit. You just hate that guy.
Yes. Yes. But I mean, it's, again, there's no passion there, right? There's no reason he's really doing this outside of that's the world that we live
in. Yeah. No, it's full, like, indebted to Lang. Some of these characters just don't have to be redeemable, and you don't have to follow them as a heroic arc. You can care about pieces of shit and be caught up in just how they're going to get out of this mess or what's going to happen to them. And no, it's damn, this is top level filmmaking. I hope Cloud gets a big screen premiere in this year, especially in Chicago.
All right. Yeah. Next up is, okay, this was a very late surprise. This is a movie called Blackbird, Blackbird, Blackberry. This is a filmmaker I've never fucking heard of in my life.
Boy, I hate that title already. This better be good.
Well, no. So a filmmaker from Georgia, Elena, let's see, Navirani. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. This is a movie I saw the poster of, and I saw the description, and I was like, look, as much as I love Aki Kaurismäki, I do not need more droll, like Roy Anderson set pieces in my life anymore. I'm good. You know, I think we've been there. Thank God I decided to watch it anyway. This is one of the most touching, interesting, intriguing and strong character studies I've seen in a long time, both on a screenplay level and on a filmmaking level. It was really refreshing to see a film set decorated and lit to such a like beautiful and also relevant to actually what's going on, but to the level that we normally only see for quote unquote horror films these days. So it was wonderful. Like every single scene, the lighting is a part of the story that's being told. The main actress, who again, I don't know, I'm not familiar with any of these people, was astonishing. She did something that we love and we talk about a lot. She talks technically in the movie, but she doesn't need to. Her body does everything that is needed along with her face. And yeah, it's just a very simple story about a woman who lives in a small town in Georgia who is not married. And that's much to the chagrin of everyone around, right? If you know anything about Georgia, how it's set up, you can look it up, but it's not good to be a single woman in Georgia, especially in middle age. And she just runs her shop. And we meet her, and she has a surprise, scary experience that shakes her loose a little bit. She's never been interested in romantic relationships. And then because of this moment, she decides maybe she is. And we just go on that journey with her, all stuck in this tiny little town. And I could not, I haven't watched a movie in a while where I was just so excited for the next scene every time, you know? I never got lost. I never sat there waiting for something to happen. It was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I doubt this movie comes out at all. And I'll say shout out the reason I watched it. Shout out to Kat Sachs. Cause when I was like, fuck this poster, fuck this shit, I found Kat's writing about it and just perused a little bit of the stuff that wasn't plot related. And Kat also mentioned what my worry. She was like, I was worried about the Aki Kaurismäki kind of thing. But thankfully, this movie completely sidesteps all of that. And it's just a very genuine and funny character portrait about people we never fucking see in a very refreshing way. And any year where we'll bitch about it later, but where we're celebrating middle-aged people like in The Substance, you could do better and watch a movie about an actual real person in middle age and what they're going through.
Which brings me to my number three, The Substance.
Just a second. Let me go grab my gun real quick. I'll be up in 10 minutes.
No, I'm going to switch the order of how we do this because I'm not going to say much on this one because we have talked about it ad nauseum. All I'll say at number three, Robert Zemeckis is here. Just got better for me the second time I saw it. I honestly think when we talked about it, I might have even like not grappled with how mammoth and potentially, corrosive this movie is, or like didn't really give it enough. Yeah, I mean, because yeah, it's feels like a sleight of hand, and then suddenly it's over, and you're like, oh, emotions. But no, I mean, this is Zemeckis at his most in control. And no, it's amazing. So I'm just going to quickly go into my number two.
Yep.
It's no, I'm just gonna keep saying like it's the brutalist. No, it's not the fucking brutalist.
I'll be seeing that, but I don't, we'll see if my unhigh hopes are earned. We'll find out.
Yeah, no. My number two, what a welcome return from this fucking Greek. It's Close Your Eyes. What? Yes. I mean, what are you going to say about this movie? This is a movie that, how long has it been since he fucking made the Kingstree Sun?
Was it like 20 documentary. Years, 30 years, whatever the fuck? It's a long time.
Because 83 is when he made El Sur.
Yeah.
Jesus. Well, he's back, and boy, was it worth the wait, because I don't know. I was floored. I was just completely emotionally walloped by this movie. I was not crying at the end, but I felt like I could, because there's too much happening in this movie to make it too, like, basically streamlined. It's simply about a man looking for someone, a friend of his who's gone missing. And then the movie takes that sort of kind of amateur detective thing and really makes a kind of very sad, kind of candlelit vigil for cinema as we know it, and not in a way that is just, not in a way like fucking Sam Mendes or Babylon does it, some shit like that. Like, this is about a man truly hurting from things disappearing, and by the time where they do the fucking Rio Bravo number, if you're not like just a puddle of emotion, I don't, maybe movies were not for you, because goddamn, I this whole movie, from that open, that kind of deceptive opening to where it goes. I thought that I knew I would like to see him return, but, you know, to have him comment on where he might have been or sort of his displeasure with how he made El Sur, because like that movie and the character in this movie, their movie was taken away from them and they didn't get to finish it the way they wanted. So for him to be that nakedly like, I'm commenting on my disappearance, was profound. And it just sidesteps all the things about like movies. Do you miss the movies? It really, yeah. I mean, you, at the end you feel like, God, what has left us and what are we dealing with now? And yeah, Close Your Eyes. Awesome. Great movie.
I still actually haven't seen it.
Oh shit. Did I spoil anything for you then?
No, you're good. You didn't say anything I didn't know about already. All I want to add, again, I haven't seen it, but everything John said didn't get you excited for this, just again, remember that what he's making this movie about is something that happened decades ago. And that's still haunting this poor, poor old person who's looking back on their life. And if that's not a movie for people who are sick with cinema, like we are, I don't know what is, you know? So I'm even more excited now.
I hate that I ruined the Rio Bravo thing for you, but
I'll be able to put it away. I can erase things.
Okay. I know how you feel about that scene as much as.
Oh, you do. You do.
No, it's one of the greatest scenes in all of movie making right there.
Well, there's not a day that doesn't go by that I don't think about Rio Bravo. So it's always in my head anyways.
Yeah, Rosemary hadn't seen Rio Bravo. We watched that recently, and it was like one of the greatest pleasures to put that movie on for somebody. Well, we don't need to talk about Rio Bravo.
Yes, okay. My number
two. Much to add to that, but hey, if you want to see Bill and I in the flesh before we have some screenings, you better believe we're going to be at a lot of these Howard Hawks things happening at the Music Box. That's one retrospective.
Rio Bravo in 2 days.
I know. Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of retrospective that we actually appreciate.
Right. Even though
it seems like, God, can we do Howard Hawks? Who hasn't seen this shit? But it's like, you're not going to see Girl in Every Port in 35mm too much. So.
Nope.
Anyway.
All right, my number two. This is a surprise because this had been number one for a long, long time. It got bumped a couple days ago, but my number two is our boy Bonello's The Beast, which, again, we have an episode you can listen to. Was that a Patreon? I think that one's public.
I don't remember.
Yeah, it was because we switched it because that one was better than the other.
Yes,
you can listen to an episode to us really get into the beast. But similar to what I said about here and what we keep saying about so many things, this movie is a part of me, is absolutely a part of me. I've technically only revisited it once since we did that episode, but I think about it constantly. Things remind me of it constantly. As far as a movie about where we're at right now with technology, with being humans, those sorts of things, I don't know of something better. If you want sci-fi movies that actually engage with what we're actually going through, this is it. You know, it's a lot of other things as well, but you know, easiest way to sell people on a movie is sci-fi.
Well, it's an entry, it's a kind of a broad gateway into, like, you know, because horror and sci-fi, as you well know, but maybe some of our listeners don't, you usually can find branch ways into, you know, talking about these things, like scientific things that might happen in the future, like forecasting these sort of things. Like, obviously, the sci-fi genre has been very good at doing that. I mean, Philip K. Dick is more relevant now than probably even when he wrote those books. So, yeah, I mean, no, I'm with you.
Like I said, you hop on the episode if you want to hear more, but couldn't recommend this film more. And I will say, because I had this happen with a friend who watched The Beast and was like, I'm just not sure, but I feel like I'm just wasn't, like, you know, necessarily ready for it, because that was the first film they'd seen by him. And they said, if I can watch something quick and then rewatch The Beast, what is it? And so I told him to watch Coma, to get the kind of space he's in right now, you know.
Right.
And they watched Coma and watched The Beast immediately after and are now deeply obsessed and have watched all of his movies since then. So maybe if you're someone not familiar with Bonello and you kind of want to wet your palate a little about and I'm saying queer, not in a gay way, like the queer kind of filmmaker that he is, where he's truly just odd. Yeah. I think the way he makes films is truly odd. Coma, I think, is a good setup before you dive into The Beast, because The Beast is also a lot more unwieldy than Coma is. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, my number one, then, The Beast. Yeah. You know, I'm sure you assume that. I haven't. And it's funny, it's the movie I've seen the least. I've only watched it once, and the first viewing was so powerful that I don't want to do the second viewing just yet. Yeah. However, as the jolly fat man of the holidays comes around, sometimes he coughs up the beautiful Blu-ray of The Beast, which I'm holding right now. And I cannot wait to dive back in. A perfect example of sometimes when a movie just hits you the right way, just sit with it. Don't even try to revisit it yet too soon, because goddamn, The Beast is a movie that we're going to be grappling with from here on out. It's really nice to have this movie in the world. Nothing has been so haunting and so has made my mind reel and has felt like it was stuffed with so many ideas. Like, we've talked about the moment, like, you know, Wes Craven via David Lynch sort of moment, or that the ending that will remain the most haunting ending I've seen for maybe the last 10 years. That ending is stuck in my throat. That ending is like,
and just to warn you
or unhear it,
it hurts worse knowing it's coming, just so you're ready for your rewatch.
I
thought it would be easier, but no. Because now that stuck in your throat ending is with you as soon as the movie starts, and everything just hurts a million times more.
God damn. Never has hurting felt so good.
Sweet, sweet pain.
It is sweet pain. I'm like that fucking Butterball pin minion, Hellraiser minion is just shoving a shiv up my ass, and I'm loving it.
I feel like, not that Bonello listens to our show, but I feel like if he did, he would love that came up in talking about The Beast. He'd probably be like, actually, you know, we were watching that on set.
Yeah, it's and I do think you have to see Coma to really get the most out of this movie. And because obviously there's things that literally are a part of both movies, and not just themes, like literal things. No.
pieces
and people, places, you know, these are all a part of that. So I would say don't watch The Beast until you've seen Coma.
Yeah. And we, I think we said it on the episode, but just to remind folks, you know, I understand life's busy. Sometimes as soon as the credits hit, you leave. Won't say what it is again to spoil it, but when this movie ends and the credits thing happens, please just do it because it's worth it. Even if you're annoyed, even if you're mad, that's okay. But just do it because it is also a very important piece of this incredible puzzle that, as John said, we're going to be tearing apart for a long time.
I'm sad for the people who didn't get to see it in the theaters to experience that little thing at the end. There was something special to doing that in a movie theater. I bet they were. I was so elated. I felt like I was walking, like Rivette said when he left, you know, fucking whatever, Fire Walk With Me. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're just like floating. I goddamn. And but it was awful because then I had to get in, I ran into someone we both know who gave me their overly analytical read of the movie. And it's like, can you get, I'm going to run you over and stick you in that fucking butter machine if yeah, I have to listen to this bullshit right now. Can I just sit with it a second? You fucking asshole.
Yeah, just feel, look, this. That's why we love Bonello, because yes, he's a very heady filmmaker, but guess what? He's also an incredibly emotionally dense filmmaker. And if you let that shit feel and become a part of you first before you climb into your analytical brain, everything sings so much stronger.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that you have to, yeah, I mean, I guess turn, no, well, turn your brain off, but just accept where you're going to go on this. And yes, it might be confusing at first, but if this is confusing to you, then you're a baby. Then I got news for you. The Batman Part 2 has been moved to 2026. So this is going to be a tough year for you. But if like even the most base retard in the world is going to accept that this is a complicated movie and go with it. So when I hear people complain about it, I it's like, I don't have, there's not enough time in the world for me to listen to like, well, I'm getting confusing. What are you, I don't know. Just,
well, again, like to jump off on what you said though. It's not, look, okay, you kind of alluded to it before I go to my number one. I don't think you need to turn off your brain. I think what Bonello does is ask you to use your brain and your fucking heart at the same time, which is one of the biggest fucking epidemics of our time, is that folks don't do both at the same time. Because, you know, whatever, we don't need to go on that too long. But that's all I mean is this is a movie that actually asks you to use your whole fucking experience and all the tools you are equipped with. And that's what art should do. So enjoy it.
It's going to give you a feeling. You're not going to come away being like, ah, yes, the plot, the characters, you know, it's those are all there. But it's the feeling that this movie is going to leave you with and that it totally earns and works itself too. That is what's so fucking good about the movie, is this fucking moment at the end hits because he built to it the whole movie. And it, that's good. That's good. You know, that's good filmmaking right there. Cause, yep. Yeah. Anyway,
hit all us right. With number one. My number one, once I say it as well, if you, cause I know you haven't seen it. If you don't want me to get much into it, if you don't know much about it, you just tell me and I won't. Because I don't want to spoil it for you. This,
how do you know I haven't seen it?
Well, because you already said it on the episode. But but this, I didn't think anything would even flirt with The Beast personally this year. But this movie came along and kicked my fucking ass up and down the court. This is Zhai Zhonka's Caught by the Tides.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Be careful with what you say on this one, because this is, okay. I'm ashamed that I have not watched this yet.
Yes. Do you know what, how he constructed this? Like, do you know anything about it?
A little.
Okay. Just, yeah. Okay. So I'll be pretty loose. I just want to get across how incredible it is, but basically, okay. So back in 2001, Zhejiangka started when he got a mini DV camera filming on his own sets, just digital shit between things, during things, while he was making all his films.
Right.
And so he's been filming nonstop with that footage since 2001. The eventual plan was loosely at the end of his career, quote unquote, to look back on all this shit that he just gathered fully from his id, you know, like he wasn't trying to do anything except put his camera where he felt it should go. He was going to gather it all and maybe make it into something. And then COVID happened. As many of us did, he lost his mind. He wasn't able to work. Well, he kept making shorts because he's insane. That dude's output is nonstop always.
Yeah.
But,
and his bravery, and he is, ain't no coward over there.
Oh, he has zero fear of the powers that be. So anyway, COVID hits, and he called one of his buddies that he edits stuff with sometimes and was like, you know what? Let's start combing through this shit and see if we can do something. So they built, okay, I'm just being real careful so I don't ruin anything for you. They built 2/3 of this movie out of the thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of footage that they went through, and then set forth from there to create a new movie amongst all these things. I won't even say the titles because I know you know them, but if you are a Zhejiangka head, this is again that heroin going straight in. But I will say part of what's so incredible here is even if you're not, you will also have an incredible experience. And then you have a whole career to go through that's going to blow your mind over and over because of how he built that whole career into this movie. As with all of his films, I think the reason he's so amazing is because, yeah, he's fiercely political, but he's also, I think, more interested in humans first. And he frames all of his tender, often love stories within China's landscape and the ever-changing landscape of China and the quote-unquote hopeful things that happened throughout the history of China, whether that's the Beijing Olympics or when they joined the World Trade Organization or these different things. The way he weaves those together in his films is always incredible, but this time you get to see him weaving footage from 2001 up to 2023 with all of that stuff and all his favorite act, well, to his two favorite actors that he works with a lot, into one of the most touching love stories that I've ever seen, along with, I think, one of the strongest, most interesting statements about what it means to be human. Because again, this won't spoil anything, but all his movies, I think, are obsessed with the liminal space and obsessed with ephemera just at large, being ephemeral rather. And this movie basically asks the question of, is it bad if we don't leave anything behind as an individual? Is that a bad thing? Is this quest we have to be remembered, to be celebrated, to be loved in permanent ways that will stick around after we're gone, does that actually matter? Are we missing out on experiences and interactions because of the obsession of thinking about what people will think of us when we're no longer here? That is all, along with a million other things, woven into this. Yeah, I won't spoil more things for you, but just again, heads of his, Zhao Tao, who is the, you know, one of the greatest actresses of all time, in my opinion, and she's in tons of his movies, tons of other people's movies. But her technically multiple different performances, since we're pulling from so many different things in this, will just break your heart open over and over again. And despite what I said about that question he's asking, I do think we land in an eerily hopeful place. I think looking back on his career when he started, he was probably very depressed and was like, what does that mean that if the world stops, I can't do the thing that I love anymore, right? And I think he probably, when he started, was going to make a very sad, tragic film about, you know, whether or not anything matters at all. And I think this film grapples with that, but in the end, I do think it comes out as an enormous love letter to how fucking hard it is to survive when you think too much and when you're aware of what's going on in the world and when you're too aware of everything, and also what it means to be an artist and why movies are something that we should fight to save.
Yeah. I guess I'll see it.
Oh my God. No, I was a fucking puddle. I was a puddle. This film is, and he's another one. I don't think he's necessarily ever had a dip as a filmmaker for me. There's eras I like more, but this is something even he has never fucked with, in my opinion, to this level. You know that feeling you get when you're watching the best of Jacques Rivette's films and you're just transported truly, entirely, right? Like it's that you're just plugged in and you can, you know, you don't know if you're breathing because you're just so far out of your body. This movie achieves that.
Yeah. Stupid movie, watch the fucking Cup of the Tide.
Yeah, and also after you watch the movie, I'd recommend, shout out to our bud Jordan Cronk. He did a great interview with him about this film earlier this year. And Jordan's been, not that a lot of people don't, people love a lot of his movies, but Jordan's been banging the drum hard for Zhanka for a long time. So it was cool to read them getting to speak together about his career and about this film. So yeah, I guess that's our 2024.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Pretty fucking good. Yeah.
Well, what a year it's been. And now we should probably get ready to sully all this goodwill.
Yep. So if you want to hop over to the Patreon, we are going to truly, you know, we've been doing this long enough. We can say it. We're going to throw it back to the very beginning and just let ourselves fucking wallow in hatred and pettiness and anger. All that vitriol that some of you, the 10 people who were listening to us then, and, you know, as opposed to the 50 who are now, but
it's so nice. They have a few jokes and they talk about movies. That's great. And I'm just like, this fucking bloop, bloop, you know, and there will be no beeps on the Patreon. That's a special place.
That's a special place where we can say whatever the fuck we want. And we're going to go hard, especially because it's fun to swing after a high, like talking about that movie and just put me on. So we're going to go straight into the hate.
Let's do it. All right. Well, if you enjoyed this and it was too sincere for you, $5 a month. That's a month. That's whatever the price of a profiterole or what. Profiterole. Why did I say profiterole? Am I fucking 80 years old? Something. It's $5. Most things cost more than $5 these days.
Yeah, just.
I was imagining going to a little market. You buy a little, you know, little pastry. But yeah, okay, whatever. It's cheap. We're not asking for much. We ask for a little bit to kind of allow us to be able to do this. So you'll get exclusive episodes over there. And like we said, you can reach out to us on there and we'll movies that are not in circulation that you want to see. You never know. Maybe we can help you out.
Yep. You want to, with this last couple minutes, anything you want to shout out that didn't make the list? We don't need to talk on it. Just anything you want to throw out there. It's okay if not.
Wicked. She's so green. No, I'm trying to think. If I'm forgetting anything. Did you see Red Rooms?
Yes.
Do you like Red Rooms?
I liked Red Rooms. It didn't hit me as hard as it's hitting a lot of people. I really liked it. I wish that's what most movies were like. Yeah. If that's the level we were at, then we would have like so much, you know.
I think it's good. Okay. All right, we're on the same level.
What about, did you watch fucking Black Dog, the Guan Hu one?
No, not yet. Oh God, I saw that was, yeah, shit. I haven't.
It's so, and guess who's
on my computer? Oh, it's on my desktop right now.
Yeah. I think I sent it to you. I can't remember, but guess who's in that?
Dasha.
Gia Zhanka, baby. And it's good. That's another filmmaker who's not as brave as his buddy Gia as far as saying whatever he wants about China, but that movie says a lot more than I expected it to. And it's full of dogs, just like Dog Man. So if you watch Dog Man and you were obsessed with all the beautiful pooches like I was, there's even more in Black Dog.
All right. Well, we're going to end this episode because it's about to end it for us right there. So this is the new era. We're on a tight leash like these fucking dogs that Will likes. So that's what I keep my dogs on, real tight leash, because I need them to always be training.